The Senate Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection will come to order Wednesday, February 25th. Okay, members, we have a few bills on our agenda, and this morning we're going to go ahead and start with Senate File 1542 with Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to explain the bill first?
Yes, that would be great.
This, Mr. Chair, members, this is, I think, the easiest bill I've done, I hope. I don't think there's any opposition, but I want to explain the situation first. Right now in Minnesota, if a person is 55 years or older, if they take a written or a defensive driving course, they can save up to 10% on their auto insurance. After 3 years, they have to renew that course. Right now, the way it's set out, the first time they take it, it's an eight-hour course, and for many, they would say that it's grueling to go through, to sit through 8 hours of classroom instruction. And so once they've taken that from then on forward, if they take it within 3 years, it's a four-hour refresher course instead of eight. The problem is the language legislatively is not clear if they get beyond 4 years, and some have said they have to go back and take the eight-hour course again instead of the simple four-hour refresher. So this bill, Mr. Chair and members, simply says that once you've taken the first course, the eight-hour course, from then on forward, you only have to take the refresher course, which is less time. So it tries to make it clear in statute. So, Mr. Chair, that is the bill. I do have I'd like to move it, but I also have one author's oral amendment as well.
Okay, Senator Gazelka, why don't you go ahead and move your oral amendment? Let's do that.
On line 1.9, there's a person 55. Instead of 55, it should be 58.
58. Okay, this is the first hearing of this bill, so we'll take that as an author's amendment. Senator Gazelka moves that on line 1.9, 55 should be stricken and it should be replaced with 58. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
And Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gazelka, are you at all concerned if someone takes the course and then 6 or 7 years later, wants to sign up for it again, and they still have to take the short course, the refresher course, rather than the full one? Are you concerned about the time? And I realize that most people, once they've taken it, since I'm in that category.
Yes.
if you forget, you know, my insurance company reminded me that I had gone beyond it, and then I signed up for it right away and got reinstated, and it was fine. Yep. But that probably is not going to be a problem where people go much beyond the 3 years, because it is a very nice bump off of your insurance. But I was just wondering.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, I forgot to mention that I teach this course, so I have the opportunity to give it for free for my clients, and so they happen to love me for it. But I have found that, frankly, you can do a whole lot in the refresher course, that if somebody's had the 8 hours, I really personally don't think from experience that they get a whole lot more added an extra 4 hours than not. And what you described as the case where they didn't renew it right away, it's not clear that they didn't have to go back and take the 8 hour. And so I just want to make it crystal clear for the consumer that, if you're 60 years old and you missed it by a year or two, or frankly five, because you've had the eight, you can come back and do the refresher and get that 10% discount.
Okay, other questions? Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Gazelka, I'm wondering why we have this legislation to begin with. I just turned 50 last year. Am I going to start going senile that I need refresher courses? Or to me, my thinking is we should be offering this to the 20-year-olds, not the 50-year-olds. But I'm just wondering why we even have this to begin with.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, That is for another day. That is not this legislation. Frankly, many insurance companies do, one company calls it steer clear. When you're a teenager, you have to go through extra training, and they have found that that actually reduces their chances of an accident. But I'm just focusing on improving what we have right here. And I think, I'm not quite to 55, but I'm ahead of you, and I'm looking forward to another 10% discount.
Okay. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, just on that point, even young 20-year-olds or middle 20-year-olds get to do steer clear and get a discount. So it is offered, Senator Brown. Okay. My kids just had to do it.
Okay. Okay, further discussion. Senator Gazelka, did you have anybody to testify at all on the bill?
I do not. I felt like I was more of an expert in this, and I did talk to some of the folks at AARP. I don't think they have any opposition to it. I don't know of any opposition to this.
Okay. Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman, so the Department of Public Safety and everything, and they're fine with it, too, correct? Or they have expressed no objection?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Okay, then I'll ask, is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify either for or against Senator Gazelka's legislation? And seeing none, then, Senator Gazelka moves that Senate file 1542 be recommended to pass and sent to general orders. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. And the motion prevails, and Senate file 1542 is recommended to pass and sent to general orders.
As amended.
As amended, yes. Thank you, Senator Gazelka. Senator Cruz. So, Senator Cruz, we're going to shift gears from insurance over to real estate.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Today, the bill we bring before you is Senate File 1739. Essentially, what this legislation does is it addresses the issue of personal ownership and management of real estate property for real estate licensees. Currently, real estate licensees are held to a different standard than similarly situated property owners who do not have a license. For a licensee, personal ownership and management of real property must be supervised by a broker. However, for property owners who do not have licensees, he or she can own or manage his or her own property without being subject to any broker supervision at all. Senate File 1739 establishes uniform treatment for all property owners so that a real estate licensee is not held to a different set of standards simply because he or she is a licensed real estate agent. Today, to testify on the bill, I have Paul Egger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and currently I'm not aware of any opposition to this bill.
Mr. Egger.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Paul Egger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and Senator Cruz did a great job of explaining the bill. The language is straightforward. I just want to reiterate our support for the bill, and this does address a specific situation that has come to our attention and that we've discussed with the Department of Commerce over about the past year. We had this language drafted up, shared it with the department. When we got it back from the advisor's office, they have not expressed any concern. And as Senator Cruz stated, I'm not aware of any opposition. So I would encourage the committee's support of the bill and be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Discussion on the bill. Members. Such a compliant committee today. Let's keep that going on the next bill.
Get her done.
All right. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Well, in seeing none, Senator Cruz moves that Senate File 1739 be recommended to pass and sent to general orders. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. And the motion prevails, and Senate File 1739 is recommended to pass and sent to general orders.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members.
Okay. And then, okay, let's do that. I'm going to take this, please. And we're ready.
Thank you, members. The next bill before us is Senate File 1629. I'm just wondering if we're going to have the same kind of process as the last two bills. Welcome, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. You know, nothing worthwhile is easy, and this is something that has been worked on conceptually for a very, very long time. And if you recall, in fact, let me turn this off. Okay. You'll recall that we had this issue before our committee a year ago, and I want to tell you what the updates are, what has transpired. There are many significant changes to the bill, and then I know that there are a lot of individuals that are interested in this, and unfortunately, a lot of them have expressed their concerns about the bill at a very short timeline. Some of them just yesterday evening, some of them this morning, some of them as we gathered here for the committee, and so I have not been able to even absorb some of that. But my hope is that during the presentation here and the testimony and the amendments, that a lot of those, I think, will be either dealt with, or at least people have a better understanding of exactly what this bill is about, what we're trying to accomplish, and what it is not going to do. So if you could please follow along the best you can on that, and I will give you the history here. The concept we're dealing with is occupational licensure. The bill last year was passed out of this committee, and it went to judiciary, in which there were some actually objections raised before, and we never even had a hearing in judiciary. So we ended up beginning on a process over the interim of working on possibilities and some amendments to take care of those concerns. And we've done so, and we've met with a lot of other people. So what I want to do is explain to you some of those, well, all of those changes we've made. As I mentioned, the concept of the bill is this. We're dealing with occupational licensure, not the licensure of business entities, but of individuals. We're talking about individuals who, in order to practice a lawful occupation, they have to go through, the law requires them to go through some training, some coursework, some test. It often involves some continuing education to maintain licensure. It always involves a board of some sort that is established in law that then regulates that particular profession or occupation. And this bill does not say that that is all bad and that is a terrible thing. This is not a libertarian bill in that sense. It does not seek anarchy. What it does is seek the appropriate application of government intervention and regulation of occupations as appropriate for public safety and health reasons, reasons to prevent pervasive fraud in an industry where there is a public interest, but it does not, we do not want government to intervene in occupational regulations for economic reasons, to fence people out, to distort the marketplace, to protect some against competition. Those are all the wrong reasons. And what has happened in the country, as well as Minnesota, over the recent decades, over the last 20, 30 years, is there has been an astronomical rise in the application of occupational regulations. And I believe it has gone far afield from protecting the public health and safety, and instead is being done for economic reasons, to prevent competition and fence others out, unnecessarily so. So that I want to make very clear up front conceptually. Let me talk about some of the changes from last year. We put in the bill an explicit hierarchy. If you look at the bill, this would be on page 2, subdivision 6 at the very top, where it discusses the least restrictive occupational regulation. This hierarchy puts in statute something that has been done traditionally or customarily conceptually in our minds as state legislatures year after year after year have addressed the topic of occupational licensure. But never has it been crystallized into this hierarchy of what it really is in practice. And the idea is that if there is no regulation, of course, you always have a resort to the courts. There's always civil litigation. That's always there. But then what can governments do to say, all right, there is some potential harm to the public, so what is the least restrictive means of occupational regulation we can impose? We don't want to just jump to licensing. As I have said, and maybe this is dangerous language, but licensing is the nuclear option. It is the ultimate because you are saying to one group, you cannot practice this occupation unless you have a license. All the other forms are requirements and certain hoops to jump through, but they don't necessarily deny you the ability. I mean, registration, they're not significant barriers. There are a lot of things you can do. That hierarchy would be above civil litigation would be maybe an inspection. Maybe it is requiring a bond or insurance. Registration, meaning filling out a piece of paper saying, I'm conducting this business, and in your city or in your state, and you want to know about me, okay, if there's any complaints, here's my name, address, my business. You put that on file. That is not a substantial burden. We can do that. And that's what we mean by registration. Certification, being voluntary. If we have this in statute that if you want to be a certified, you name it, whatever, that you can do some requirements, and then you are legally allowed to use certified as part of your title, your marketing materials. And if in the marketplace that's a cue that says, oh, well, this person is a certification, this person does not, so then I can decide what I want to do. Well, that certification is voluntary. It doesn't mean that someone is precluded from practicing that occupation. What it means is that they have chosen to either do it on their own reputation or don't need that certification for whatever reason, but that's voluntary. It doesn't prevent someone from practicing their lawful occupation. Again, then, at the top of the list is licensure. Licensure, as we are looking at this here, licensure for an individual occupation, again, not a business, but an individual occupation, is that highest form involving, again, some level of training, some a board that administers this, a test of some sort, continuing education, those things, and that it's deemed that that is appropriate, that the health and safety of the public is at risk if we don't do that. That is a key part of a change in the bill. Also, we put in the bill an explicit description of substantial burden. That was something that was a little unclear, but we wanted to make sure that, again, as I described, I mean, a registration is not a substantial burden. Requiring a bond or you to carry insurance is not a substantial burden. But requiring 1,500 hours of classroom, maybe in an area that doesn't even apply to your business because it's caught up in a larger category, requiring a test that has nothing to do with it or whatever those requirements would be, that could be a substantial burden. But we put that definition in there. Also, we made the description of the right to pursue an occupation easier to understand by removing words such as arbitrary or unnecessary from the description that was in last year's bill. Did some better language on that. We also put in the bill exemptions for government employees and fiduciaries. And that's very important. Let me tell you about that. The question came up as we pursued a hearing in judiciary was, well, what about police officers? Well, clearly, that's not what this bill is about. It's clear to everyone that that is something that is a high enough level with public safety. But we did was we specifically said government employees, which are police officers, and are exempted from this bill. And we also exempted fiduciaries. There are fiduciaries, meaning people have responsibility for the care of their clients it's a very high standard. We have exempted them out as well. And what we're trying to get at is really conceptually is people, individual entrepreneurs, small businesses that are trying to make a go of it in this economy, but they're finding substantial burdens placed upon them by government when there is no public interest to do so. And that is what we're trying to get at with this bill. So those are changes that we made, and what we did is we introduced a new bill. So this is this one you have before you is actually a new bill incorporating these changes. Then members, We have had a number of people come to meet and say, well, here are some additional suggestions. And a number of them we have incorporated into the A3 amendment. So, Mr. Chairman, at this time, what I'd like to do is, and I will go through these. In fact, why don't I do that? Why don't I do that first? I'll explain what they are. Yes. I don't want to just adopt it and pass it over because they're significant to what I think a number of people in the audience would be interested in. Number one, most of these changes came from the League of Minnesota Cities, and I'd like to thank Patrick Hines for coming to see, and he had a number of items which I think we were able to accommodate, which I think improved the bill, and that is the genesis of most of the author's amendment here. And one of the key items was the notion of individuals versus a person, and the confusion in the legal world about the personhood of businesses, and we want to get away from that. So to make it completely clear that we are not talking about business licenses, not about business entities, but about individuals with occupational licenses, we have swapped out everywhere throughout the bill where it refers to a person, and we have inserted an individual to make it abundantly clear what we are going after in this bill. Also, we are added in the item where we have in the hierarchy, I mentioned on page 2 where you followed along, where we have the bonding requirement. We are adding the language or requirement to carry insurance. Essentially the same concept that there is something backing up this individual who is practicing this occupation, whether it be bonding or insurance. We're okay with either of those, so we're adding that language. And also, again, along the same lines of the businesses versus occupations, we added language on the, you'll see on the author's amendment, lines 10 through 13, further clarification of the business versus occupation. And then as you go further down the author's amendment, we have on lines 27 and 28, one of the issues is, well, what do you do when there's federal laws preempting? What if it's what if there is a federal licensure requirement? What if the Securities and Exchange Commission requires certain requirements of people doing things on financial reports or auditing or whatever it might be? And we acknowledge that we cannot, nor are we seeking to preempt federal law. So we have added some language that states clearly that we're subject to whatever federal requirements there are dealing with licensure. And then lastly, we have on line 30 on the author's amendment, we had done the specific, this was actually previously in the bill, we have the, it was section 4 of the bill, no change to collective bargaining rights, and I refer to section 179.10. We added, to make sure, we added the public employee piece of that as well. And this is something on the collective bargaining rights that Senator Rest had asked to have in the bill last year. And we're just adding to that now to further clarify that this is no impact on collective bargaining rights whatsoever, and that we're adding section 179A.06 to the bill as well to cover the entire range of collective bargaining. So those are the additional changes as incorporated in the A3 amendment. Mr. Chairman, I would move adoption of the A3 amendment.
Senator Gerlach moves the A3 amendment. Do we have discussion? Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, can you just give me I'm trying to get my head around the double negative in the amendment on line 110. And if you can, you do a great job of explaining things. So if you just walk me through it, I think I'll understand what you're trying to do. Does not include a regulation not related to. So is the intent there to not?
Well, that's a good question. You know what I'm going to do is, Mr. Chairman, is I'm going to defer to counsel who drafted that.
Sure, we try to avoid double negatives.
Yes.
For this purpose.
Yes.
Counsel?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Reiner, this language came from the cities, and as I read it, and it may be not completely elegant, if it's not related to an individual's qualifications to perform an occupation, it's outside the scope of the definition of occupational regulation. And it gives a list of the sorts of things that wouldn't be included in that, such as business license, permit, franchise, or land use regulation. So,
okay, so it's an, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Senator Reiner.
Intending to acknowledge that there are some ancillary things that are necessary to for a person to do business that a city may require, but doesn't get into the bigger level discussion you're trying to have.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for counsel. I haven't had a chance to fully think through this amendment language changing from person to individual. Could that have any impact upon individuals practicing one of these professions employed by a business? In other words, could it trigger some licensing if it's done in a business context that otherwise would not be if it were a sole proprietorship?
Mr. Stang.
That's a good question. I don't think so. The problem with person, as you know, was person in Minnesota statutes, unless defined specifically, includes bodies politic and corporate, like partnerships and corporations, limited liability partnerships. But the occupational licensing intended to be addressed by this is related to an individual, and I don't think. But for example, if somebody works for an accounting firm as an accountant, he still needs to be licensed as an accountant. Somebody who works for a law firm as a lawyer still has to be licensed individually as a lawyer. And I don't think anything in here adds anything to those sorts of requirements.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Senator Gerlach, I assume the intent of your bill was to ease some of these requirements, whether or not it's an individual practicing this profession alone or in concert with other individuals, and I just want to make sure that that's not negatively impacted. I'm not suggesting that it is, Mr. Chair. I want to make certain.
Senator Gerlach, this is an author's amendment, so if we can adopt that first and then further the discussion, I think that would be good. So all in favor of the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gerlach.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, then I wanted to offer up some individuals to the committee to discuss some of the legal aspects and also certainly the economic aspects. First, Dr. Morris Kleiner, to my left, is a labor economist and renowned author in the field of labor economics and occupational licensure with the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. He's here today offering up his own opinions, not, in fact, you'll probably say this as a disclaimer, not on behalf of the school. But Morris Kleiner would like to discuss some of the economics.
Please welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Morris Kleiner, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Morris Kleiner. I'm employed at the University of Minnesota. My views will be only my own and not those of any school or institution that I may represent. My comments today are in support of the Bill 1629, and mainly I'm focusing on the economics of this issue. The other forms of regulation, such as bonding, which establishes funds that can be made available if someone doesn't do their job correctly, registration, which is a government listing of individuals who are qualified, or certification, which is a higher form of regulation, where individuals can attain a certain standing within the occupation. They're recognized, and only those individuals who meet that standard can use the term certification. All those allow for individuals to engage in that occupation, and others, if someone wants to hire a service, to choose individuals who don't have that level of knowledge, skill, or training. The form that restricts and really forms a monopoly is occupational licensing. And work that I've done nationally suggests that occupational licensing has grown from about 5% in the 1950s to 30%, and if you include all the other forms of regulation, approaches almost 40% of the U.S. workforce. These other forms of regulation, at least in terms of the estimates that I've done along with many of my colleagues, don't really have a significant economic effect. That is, they don't raise prices above what or wages above what it would take to enter those occupations in terms of a normal return on human capital. Licensing results in a significant increase in wages and prices for individuals who are providing those services, and that's largely due to the fact that a monopoly is being created. There are significant effects at the national level, and students at the Humphrey School have done some estimates of the effects in Minnesota that unnecessary licensing results in about a $3.6 billion annual reallocation from consumers to individuals who have this monopoly, and this results in lost output of about $1.1 billion per year as a result of this unnecessary monopoly. Nationally, those estimates suggest equivalent amounts, and this also has consequences in terms of potential lost jobs, and unnecessary licensing can cost up to about 15,000 jobs as a result of these practices. These have implications both for income redistribution, given that licensing individuals who are licensed generally are at the upper part of the income ladder. Consumers generally are at average, so this results in a redistribution from consumers to individuals who do have this monopoly. It also results in individuals who would like to enter an occupation or being restricted because by definition, licensing says that you cannot provide your services unless you have a government license or a government monopoly. And if you do that, there's significant fines, even resulting in jail. So there's significant barriers to entry with licensing that does not occur with these other forms of regulation, and this restricts individuals from entering these occupations. There are also consequences for individuals who would like to move to the state. There are restrictions in terms of individuals in a number of occupations because they have to meet the standards of the state, and this results in additional structural barriers to individuals wanting to move to Minnesota from other states as well. So all these result in significant economic costs. There are issues of income distribution from consumers to individuals who are in licensed occupations, and also restrictions in terms of individuals who want to provide these services but are not able to do so, and consumers have less choice because of this government-instituted monopoly. So all these are potential economic costs from unnecessary licensing.
Members, or Senator Gerlach?
Lee McGrath. You want to introduce yourself?
Well, please state your name for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Lee McGrath. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota chapter of the Institute for Justice. Neither today nor at any time have I been an anarchist, but I am happy to be here. I'm happy to be here in support of Senator Gerlach and Senator Rest and Senator Pappas's bill, Senate File 1629. This is an excellent bill, and in addition to the economic arguments that Professor Kleiner has made about how this destroys about 15,000 jobs and costs consumers about $3.6 billion a year, I wanted to point out that there are serious problems on a consumer protection perspective from these type of occupational regulations. Occupational licensing generally does not work. It does not help consumers. Now, we may want it to work. It may be very intuitive to us that if we require people to get certain amounts of education, they will be subsequently competent. But unfortunately, the reality is that licensing is ineffective at screening out incompetence, and frauds. So in other words, all the costs that Professor Kleiner has spoken about are not offset by an increase in consumer protection. And the reason why, although well-intentioned, occupational licensing generally fails to deliver is in part structural. First, that it is mostly an academic exam. Most of them are fill-in-the-bubble exams that happen very early in one's career and not particularly predictive about fraud or about competency later in people's career. Additionally, there tends to be a problem of regulatory capture. Those who are interested in good government are particularly concerned about what happens when a group captures the regulatory process, and that is often common in the area of occupational licensing boards. Here in Minnesota, for example, we have a tradition of having 7 members on the licensing boards, generally, 6 of whom are licensees, only 1 a public member. Additionally, in Minnesota, we have a tradition of funding the licensing boards through dues. I am not suggesting that any particular board is corrupted by this, but I am suggesting that it is something of great concern, which research suggests tends to produce a reduced effectiveness in consumer protections and particularly great reluctance to revoke licenses. This has exacerbated the ineffectiveness of licensing as consumer protection is exacerbated by a third dynamic here in Minnesota. We have a long tradition of when enacting new licensing bills of grandfathering in everyone who is currently providing the service. And so the argument is a bit, the proponents of licensing are somewhat of a difficult position, advocating that there is a large amount of harm that is occurring in the marketplace and therefore regulation is needed, and then additionally advocating for the grandfathering in of all those who are currently providing the service. Now, I understand that licensing is a very emotional issue. It's an issue that people seek self-affirmation from. They feel good about themselves because they are licensed. It is a signal that someone has achieved an educational requirement. Fortunately, in Senator Gerlach's bill, there is a hierarchy, including certification. And certification can give that type of signal to the consumer, as well as the recognition of that human aspect of what licensing does. But it does it without the cost that Professor Kleiner. My law firm has represented hair braiders. We've represented sign hangers. We have represented casket makers. This is an important piece of legislation that advances the pursuit of one's occupation, and I encourage the committee to support this bill.
Thank you. Okay. And members, I have one other testifier, Mr. Jim Dolfi, who has a story to tell about his experience with occupational licensure. If I could have Jim come on up.
Welcome, Mr. Dolfi. Please state your name and record, or name for the record.
My name is Jim Dolfi. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the council, for allowing me to tell my story to show my support in favor of this bill. I feel it would benefit people in the situation that I've been in. My wife and I had operated a tree business for over 5 years, and currently our business is shut down. The cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and others had adopted a licensing law that required a certified arborist be on staff to be able to do tree work in those cities. that licensing law to have a certified arborist on staff just doesn't pertain to any of the work that my company or many other tree companies did. Simple tree removal and tree trimming doesn't require a certified arborist. There's numerous other ways to get the training and the necessary protection for the consumer. We were insured. We'd been through many climbing seminars and registered with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It ended up basically coming down to somebody determined that a certified arborist was required to be able to do anything with a tree. And that didn't make sense in our industry, as we had never injured a homeowner. We had always provided the insurance that was necessary. We'd never provided any harm to anyone the way we operated. Essentially, it became a bar into the industry for us. We've tried to offer numerous ways with the city of ways that we could get in. The certified arborist didn't even have to be on site, so we didn't understand what the purpose of it was. We tried to get out of the city what was the purpose of this requirement. All we could get is we protected the homeowners from, well, the most common argument we got was protected the homeowners from someone coming, doing damage, and leaving without covering them. I don't see how licensing in general, they're protected from that, because the people who did that weren't licensed anyway. That still doesn't protect them, to put stricter licensing requirements on there. What had actually happened after, a North Minneapolis storm was where we really kind of took a turn for our company, because we had been trying to work with the city of Minneapolis. We were working in other cities that we could be licensed with, trying to find an answer to this city of Minneapolis' requirement, and we hadn't gotten that far, so we were avoiding working there. The tornadoes came through Minneapolis the summer of 2009. Several customers that we had had called us, tried to get us to take trees off their roof so they could close them up so there was no more damage done. They couldn't get a hold of other tree companies. There just wasn't enough companies in the city because most of them had been barred out of the city to work. We ended up going there trying to help them. We got fined by the city, $250 fine, told to leave the city, wouldn't let us finish taking the tree off the roof so the customer could close it up. They ended up telling us if we continued to work, they were going to fine us $500 and seize our equipment. That scenario actually got to the point that we had just parked our truck in a church parking lot to try to talk to the city and find out what we could do, and the city ended up calling our company number and basically threatened to take our truck out of the city if we left it parked in the city. That's an extreme example at that point, as far as I think going beyond what they should have, because obviously it's not illegal to be in the city. But this is an example, I guess, of where we have been barred out of the industry. We operated under safe operations ways of doing our business. We had the training necessary. Their requirement actually required something that had very little, if any, to do with what we did, and there was many other means to handle it. And I think that a little bit of regulation on how they make their licensing could have prevented the situation of shutting out many businesses like mine.
Thank you, Mr. Adolfi. Any questions from the members for any of the testifiers that talked in support of this bill? Senator Vandeveer.
I would have a question. You're discussing relationship with the cities. I'm wondering the 110 to 113, lines 113 on the A3 amendment. What is that attempting to do? I wasn't clear. I'm still not clear on that.
Senator Gerlach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandeveer. The one of the issues that has come up is a lot of individuals or people have been coming to us saying that, this is going to affect what we're doing, and find out that what they're really referring to is business licenses. And that this bill does not affect business licenses. If a city wants to have an ordinance to say you have to have a business license to operate the business, that's one thing. That's separate. We're talking about individual occupational licensure of the type where we're talking about, where we're talking about a level of education required, the testing, ongoing continuing education, dues paying, a board that oversees those sort of things. That's what we're getting at. And so we keep trying to explain to people that if you're talking about a business license, this bill does not apply. So this is clarifying language to say that if it's a business you're talking about, you are not included in this bill.
So,
Vandiver.
Senator Gerlach, this doesn't expand any exclusions for cities that are give them any different in regular law?
Senator Gerlach.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Vandiver, in relation to any kind of business licensure, no, it has no impact on that. That's the purpose of that additional language in the A3 amendment. With respect to occupational licensure, certainly in Mr. Dolphy's case, the bill, should it pass, gives him a defense. He can then go to court and say, I'm not hurting anybody. Your barrier to my lawful occupation practice in your city is a violation of the law because the public safety and health is not at risk, and he has a defense in which to do that. Again, as an individual occupational licensure requirement, the city can require, or in fact, I think they do, where they say you need to register if you're doing business here, or you fill out a form, or we want to know you're doing business here, we want to require a bond or insurance, something of that level. Which is perfectly reasonable, but the idea of barring someone because of the occupational licensure, we're saying that that is unacceptable.
Members, I think what we're going to do now is move to the opposition. I have at least 7 people listed on here. We will take a vote at the very end, so those that are testifying in opposition, if you can, 3 or 4 minutes at the most, so we have time for everybody to say what they need to say. Josie Helmbrick from Minnesota Academy of Audiology, you're first, and why don't we bring up Bill Straczynski as well. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. And committee, my name is Josie Helmbrecht, and I'm here to represent the Minnesota Academy of Audiology. I chair the Governmental Relations Committee there. The Minnesota Academy of Audiology is a professional association of audiologists who are professionals who diagnose and treat non-medical hearing imbalance disorders. The audiologists of MAA appreciate the difficult economic times faced by fellow Minnesotans and support the creation of jobs and responsible occupational regulation. However, prior to some of the amendments, which I have some questions about, MAA is concerned regarding potential consequences the proposed changes in Senate File 1629 would have on licensed audiologists and the patients we serve. While it appears Senate File 1629 does not eliminate licensure, any change to make licensure more voluntary reduces the power of license as a regulatory tool, which ultimately reduces consumer protection or public health and safety. Having viewed the press conference, there does seem to be some legitimate basis for Senate File 1629 for some occupations. Audiologists, as with other healthcare providers, enter into provider agreements with third-party payers, including Medicare and Medicaid. The Centers of Medicare and Medicaid define a qualified audiologist as an individual with a master's or doctoral degree and state licensure. Medicare opt-out laws do not define practitioners to include audiologists, and therefore audiologists can't opt out of Medicare. Some would like to, given their reimbursement scheme. But many third-party payers follow Medicare guidelines as well. Choosing to attempt to practice without licensure is simply not an option for audiologists without violating federal laws. So my question would be, does the author's amendment to exemptions exempt audiologists and other similar healthcare providers who are required to follow those federal statutes?
Senator Gerlach, you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have that covered in the A3 amendment, where on lines 27 and 28, we adopted this. This is required by federal law to be subject to occupational regulation in order to engage in a lawful occupation. So I believe they're covered.
Okay. So that would remain a not voluntary but mandatory licensure.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to any federal requirements, that is the case.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, yep. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Committee.
Bill Straczynski.
going to be as easy.
Mr. Straczynski, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I represent the Minnesota Electrical Association. And Gary Thaden here is also with the NECA contractors and mechanical contractors. And it'd be easier if Mr. Thaden was available to go first.
Welcome. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, representative, we have some serious concerns about this
bill. Mr. Thaden, please state your name for the record and proceed.
And I apologize for using the wrong nomenclature, senators. My name is Gary Thaden. I'm with the Minnesota Mechanical Contractors Association, which represents the plumbing industry, and I'm also with the Minnesota Contractors of the National Electrical Contractors Association. And I'll be talking mostly about the plumbing board and the electrical board in relationship to this bill. First off, plumbers were first licensed in Minnesota in the 1930s, and electricians were first licensed in the 1950s. And so I rather doubt that there is any problem, if there was grandfathering at that time, I rather doubt that there's any problem with people who are still holding those licenses from that time period. In addition, neither one of those boards deals with sanctioning license holders. That's done by the Department of Labor and Industry. And so there are a number of gross generalizations done by the previous testifiers in support of this bill, which do not apply to the plumbing and electrical industry. In addition, on line 2.13, it uses the word and, so that you have to have the predetermined qualifications and continuing education. To use the word license, there are a number of licenses in the state of Minnesota which do not have continuing education, so I'm not sure what category they would fall under this bill. For example, plumbers are in the midst of establishing continuing education, but they do not have it at the moment. There's also other occupational licensing in the construction industry that does not have continuing education, and so I'm not sure how they would fit in. In addition, two other points. The Minnesota already has a chapter on occupational licensing. In fact, it's the next number, Chapter 214. And the legislature has set out criteria for regulation and for regulating new occupations. I assume that the legislature, when they adopted licensing for various occupations, followed that criteria. And I think that there's some contradiction between that criteria and what's laid out in this bill. And so I'm not sure when the court decides which occupation is still an occupation that's licensed and which one isn't, which standard that the court should follow in this, because I think there's some contradictions. Lastly, when you have a state license and you're allowed to do something to the exclusion of somebody else, I believe that gives you a property right under the federal constitution. And I think that taking away that property right without due process of law and a hearing in regards to yours is would result in a lot of litigation over each occupational license and whether it's qualified under this statute or not. And so I think it will result in a lot of litigation in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Thaden, could you explain for me what property rights you're talking about?
They have achieved the right to have this license. They have invested substantial monies in their business and in their occupation. For example, master electricians, you can only pull a permit, electrical permit, if you are a master electrician. And so they've established a number of invested a lot of money in having this type of license, and so that's why I think that there might be an issue in regards to property rights and this particular bill.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I actually was a little curious about this issue with current law, because I do remember years ago we did have a subcommittee on occupational licensing that any group that wanted to be licensed had to clear that subcommittee, and it was fairly difficult. I mean, you really had to prove that there was some public safety issues at stake. So I think it might bear looking at, Senator, about are there any conflicts with the previous statute, or are they both kind of consistent? Because, you know, I mean, I am a co-author in the bill, and I do support the general concept, but let's make sure we don't run into a situation where we're just, you know, going to have more lawsuits, as the witness indicated.
Senator Gerlach, can the city still require some of this, or how do you know how that works?
Senator, or Mr. Chairman, you mean is can the city still require
the master electrician requirement that they, as far as for doing the job?
Well, yes. Well, I think, certainly. We still have licensure under the law, under this bill. It's certainly there. And honestly, I mean, I would think that anybody that tried to say I'm an electrician and I don't think we need a license, but I think that the government's rebuttal is that certainly the safety of individuals is at risk here, and I think it's kind of a slam dunk as far as that goes. So I just don't see it as an issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Bill. Is it Haney?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill. Mr. Straczynski, sorry about that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. I just have a few observations on this particular piece of legislation. I understand the intent. I've been around a long time. I've been guilty of lobbying six laws currently on the books that are occupational licenses. But I want to assure the committee, the last time we did an occupational license, last two times, one for psychologists and one for fire sprinkler contractors and installers, everybody had to take the tests. Everybody had to be qualified. It didn't make a difference if you're a union employee already working in the industry. There were no grandfathering provisions. That's how that legislature, about 14 years ago, dealt with that particular issue. So that everybody did have to make sure that they were indeed qualified. But because of the life safety concerns, there were some standards put in place and an examination and continuing education, all those kinds of things. Mr. Chairman, we're concerned about current licensing that exists today and current laws and regulations, which are a body of law, administrative law as well as case law, which has been developed over the last 50 years from the electrical perspective. And so we're concerned about the impact that may have and people bringing challenges to that law and perhaps arguing with it and have now a substantial burden of proof on their side. And we just think it could lead to more litigation. I'm not an attorney, but it could lead to more litigation and more judicial-made law. And as much as I respect the courts in this state and in this country, they're not necessarily experts in electrical issues, for example, themselves. So that's of some concern. One other quick point in the interest of time, I just want to point out that was of some concern, and we'll watch this as the bill evolves, some other issues. But if you take a look at point 2.15 of the bill itself, it talks about it's illegal for a non-licensed person to perform the occupation for compensation. A license is the most restrictive form of occupational regulation. Well, I have to admit, and I will admit so publicly, I've done some electric wiring in my own home, but I am not qualified to do electric wiring in my wife's law office building, which is a commercial building, even if I did it for free, because that's how spouses tend to work with the other party. Or if you want to help your friend who's building a house or a cabin or something like that, you other people who aren't qualified doing it work for free because you know a little bit about it, and you can go to Menards and get or whatever and get some equipment, we all have access to that. But to doing it for other people, I think this law would actually expand the current scope that exists today and current prohibitions that exist today. And we're concerned about those kinds of things. There's no compensation involved. It's done for free. But I'm not qualified to do commercial work or anything else. These are very sophisticated. The continuing education requirements are most important under today's law. The technology is changing on an annual basis. So we always work with codes. Codes are always developed through the agency and what have you. Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there. Thank you for the opportunity to share some observations with you. Senator Gerlach, we're happy to work with you on some of these concerns. Thank you. I apologize for not getting to you sooner.
Thank you, Mr. Straczynski and Mr. Thaden. And too many names I haven't seen before. But can I have Bill Haney come up? Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Gerlach, my name is Bill Haney. I'm legislative and political director for IBEW, Minnesota State Council. We are absolutely opposed to this bill. Feel that the state sets up regulation and licensure requirements for a reason. Electrical licenses to protect the public for safety issues, electricity is a very dangerous thing. It's also to assure the public that when they buy a building, whether it's a home or a commercial building, new or previously owned, that the work done in there was done up to a code, a standard by someone that is licensed by the state to do that work up to code. The bill talks about a hierarchy, a certification, a regulation, or a licensure. A certified electrician, a registered electrician, or a licensed electrician, it's then incumbent upon the homeowner or the building owner to do a lot of research to figure out what's the difference, what qualifications did the individual have to meet, and what does that mean for me? You know, as a homeowner, if I'm going to hire, I have to decide one of those three individuals, how am I going to do that? I need to know with some assurance that the state regulation is protecting me. The it was mentioned that especially in tough economic times, you want to be able to loosen things up a little. And I would say just the contrary. That's because it's kind of a phenomenon we call trunk slammers, but when times are tough, more people are really looking for work and they're desperate and they need to feed their family and they think, geez, what can I do? Well, you know, I helped my brother with his electrical work, so maybe I can do some home wiring. You know, well, I'm not licensed to do it, but I can just claim it's a burden, and then I don't have to get through all that rigmarole to be an actual licensed electrician. You don't want to loosen things up when public safety is concerned in tough economic times. I'll tell you a story. My dad told me years ago, he was fishing with some of his friends, and there were three people in the boat. They had the usual bet, $1 on the first fish and $5 on the largest fish, right? So end of the day, one fish was caught. Woman had caught the fish, one fish, said, okay, you each owe me $6. My dad said, well, you know, I'll give you $1 on the first fish, but the largest fish, well, largest means bigger than another fish. So, you know, there was no other fish caught, so your fish can't be the largest fish because, you know, and he was just playing around having fun. But, you know, people interpret things differently. Down the road, let's say somebody says, well, I want to install and wire up an air conditioner in your backyard where your kids play, and I don't really want to have to be a licensed electrician to do that. So they make a case to a court provided in the bill here, and the court interpret things a little differently than you or I might today. And they say, well, okay, you can get a certification to do that. You want to risk that with your kids? I don't think so. My kids used to run around the air conditioner in the backyard chasing the dog, all kinds of stuff. And that's, you know, you want to be sure that darn thing's in there right. You want to be sure that you get a good install on your air conditioner. You want to be sure that, you know, who's ever handling your money on a real estate deal isn't going to rip you off. You want to be sure that the nurse is going to stick you in the rear end with the right needle, too. And that's some of the things that regulation, licensure help assure the public. It doesn't guarantee anything, but it helps assure that people, to the best we can, are licensed to know what they're doing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Haney. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I just did want to respond to one point here. I think that some individuals are, I guess I'll say, maybe overreacting a little bit to what this is getting at. Mr. Haney said that somebody can do wiring work for his brother and, well, just claim it's a burden and there he's okay. That's not what this bill does at all. You can't just say it's a burden. First of all, there is that individual is going to have to say, well, let's see, I'm going to have to hire an attorney and I'm going to have to file suit and I'm going to have to try to overturn this. That's a lot, you know, to do. You have the initial burden. This is more Judiciary Committee here, but in the defense and relief section of the bill, that individual first has to show the initial burden of proof that whatever requirements there are is a substantial burden. And then is any rational person going to come back, any rational court going to come back and say that electrical wiring is not a safety issue? I think common sense tells us that that is not a concern for what this bill is getting at.
Thank you, Senator Gerlach. We have Chris Eden, Deputy Commissioner of DALI.
Not to be confused with Chris.
And Patrick Hines, why don't you come up from the League of Minnesota Cities as well. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Chris Eden, and I'm with the Department of Labor and Industry. And at the outset, I want to say I agree with a number of statements that Senator Gerlach has made. Oftentimes, licensing can be used as a means to keep other folks out of the profession. But our concerns are with the way this bill goes about addressing that concern. The Department of Labor and Industry licenses a number of trades and occupations, including electricians, plumbers, residential contractors. And we are concerned with the process that this bill sets up. For example, if you've got an individual who wants to become an electrician, he takes the electrician's exam. Let's say he doesn't pass that. He, at that point, would have the option to go to court and indicate that the licensing and exam requirements aren't the least restrictive burdens to become an electrician. That would require the department to retain the services of the Attorney General's office. We'd have to go to court. We would have to defend why the legislature determined a license was appropriate and that it is the least restrictive means of regulating that profession. But let's just say the court disagrees with us. The court determines that we didn't take the least restrictive means of regulating this profession. Licensing would theoretically be thrown out. Well, then what happens at that point to electricians? Can any person then practice being an electrician because the court threw out the licensing requirement? It's very unclear what would happen in the interim. In addition, that process would basically allow the courts to determine who should be licensed. This body would effectively be delegating its authority to decide who should be licensed to a court. The court would make those decisions on a case-by-case basis. There wouldn't be public dialogue. There wouldn't be testimony from interested parties. And we think that's the way that licensing decisions should be made. There may be licenses that, upon reflection, no longer should exist. But we would ask that this body look at those on a case-by-case basis. As part of the administration, we do what you tell us. If you tell us an occupation has to be licensed, we'll license that occupation. If you tell us it shouldn't be licensed, we will no longer license them. But we think it's this body that should be making those decisions.
Thank you. Mr. Hines, would you state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Patrick Hines with the League of Minnesota Cities. The League brought forward a number of concerns with the bill to Senator Gerlach, and we appreciate his willingness to work with us. One of those concerns regarding the overbreadth of the language itself was addressed, perhaps inelegantly, with the A3 amendment. But the other concerns remain, and I'll try not to restate things that have been said, but we really feel that this is going to invite courts to substitute their judgment for local elected officials. Under current law, if someone challenges a regulation, it's the job of the court to determine whether there's a reasonable basis for that regulation. And the court establishes limits. And if it finds that a particular regulation is arbitrary or capricious, or if it lacks a rational connection to the harm it's trying to cure, then it can be invalidated. And I think that's essentially what happened with the hair braider licensure case, albeit through a consent decree. But that decree, as I understand it, basically said that particular licensure requirement was arbitrary because it didn't have a rational relationship to what the hair braiders actually did. And in that case, you had an agency-adopted rule that was invalidated under the current legal format, and I think that worked fine. Under the bill, the burden of proof shifts significantly. So once someone establishes a substantial burden, which can be cost to them, the city has to prove, or the agency, by clear and convincing evidence, that it has a compelling interest against a present and recognizable harm. And it also directs the court not to give any deference to the city's or the agency's findings. And the deference that a court gives isn't done as a courtesy. It's done to ensure that it doesn't overstep its bounds and substitute its judgment for the judgment of the local elected officials. And we're afraid that a court case under this scenario would essentially direct the judge to listen to a city's argument for why it wanted to do something one way, listen to the plaintiff's argument, and then make its own decision about what it thinks is best. And that would be a significant change to the way courts review laws adopted by cities and agencies. And so for that reason, the league does oppose the bill. Thank you. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Gines. Tricia Grimes.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Tricia Grimes. I work for the Office of Higher Education, which is a state agency. Our agency issues something called solicitor's licenses. These are licenses to employees of usually a for-profit career school, post-secondary school, that is recruiting students. And the reason we issue these licenses is that years ago, consumers complained that they had been victimized by schools misrepresenting the education that was offered. The interesting sidelight to these solicitor's licenses is that the business that is operating the post-secondary school has less liability under the solicitor's license than they might have otherwise. The schools are required to post a bond in order to operate under state law. And the bond may be $10,000 for a tiny little school. It may be $250,000 for a big school, and the bond costs them about 1%. If the solicitor is licensed with us, the maximum liability of the business is the amount of that bond. If the solicitor is not licensed with us and was recruiting students and students felt they had been victimized by misrepresentation, then they could take them to court and there would not be that limit on liability. One of the things that this is in the greater context of this is that for-profit career schools around the country, there are a number of students that feel they have been victimized by these schools, and they're asking for more regulation, not less. And our concern is that with this bill, that we would not be able to continue to license solicitors, and therefore that the students would not feel they were getting the consumer protection that they originally were asking for. We also have another concern, which is that by portraying certification as a less restrictive option, there could be some confusion with the certificates offered by post-secondary institutions in many occupations, such as welding or cosmetology, massage therapy, other kinds of certificates. Certificates are often offered as a credential that is less than an associate degree or a bachelor's degree, but it is a credential recognized in the workplace.
Thank you, Ms. Grimes. We do have a few more minutes. So that's the list of the names that signed up ahead of time, so we try to make accommodation for a few more, but please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Reich with the Department of Commerce, and I'll be very brief. I'd like to echo most of the sentiments that have been raised by the Department of Labor Industry and the Office of Higher Ed. And just to say quickly that I've been in touch with staff and raised a number of concerns, many of which were addressed with the amendment. Many of our licensees at the Department of Commerce have a fiduciary responsibility that is recognized in statute. Many of them are required to be licensed as a result of federal law, and so many of those are taken care of. However, a few occupations do remain that would be captured under this bill, and each individual in those occupations could potentially bring a private right of action against the department. And much like Dolly and the Department of Higher Ed, we would face a high risk of litigation and therefore have concerns about the bill. But I would like to thank the staff and for working with us so far. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wright.
We have a Tom Heisel. Please be brief, Mr. Heisel, but state your
Chair,
name for the record.
Nancy Hilden, and I'm here on behalf of AIA, the Architects Institute of America, Minnesota chapter, and with me is Tom Heisel, one of our members from Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Tom Heisel, a practicing architect and the treasurer of AIA Minnesota, American Institute of Architects. Today I'm representing AIA and over 2,200 members that we serve. We are opposed to this legislation. We believe that the bill is unnecessary. The architectural profession is regulated in all 50 states and throughout the world. It's due to the importance that we must protect all our citizens' health, safety, and welfare. To be licensed in Minnesota, an architect must have a master's degree level of education, followed by a minimum of 3 years of supervised experience, and have passed over 30 hours of exams that are detailed and intense, and they're administered on a national basis. This is mandated by the state of Minnesota's licensing laws, and they're designed to protect all of our citizens in their health, safety, and welfare. The AIA is concerned that this bill could undermine and contradict existing provisions in existing law. As we read the current language, it could empower the judicial branch and judges to determine public policy in lieu of our elected representatives. It has the potential to create confusion for our municipal and state building inspectors regarding preparation and certification of plans for building permits. A building is very complicated. For example, changes to this Capitol building have affected airflow, which can lead to poor air circulation, allowing mold to grow and so on. Our profession takes the responsibility to ensure that the health and life safety is maintained. Also, we believe that this bill could cause confusion amongst consumers and practitioners, and we need to limit that, and we need to limit any unnecessary litigation required to resolve issues that this bill could also create. Our professional mandate and our training and all of our continuing education is simply to promote the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens, and we strongly believe that that mandate needs to be protected. So in that, we oppose the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heisel. We'll take one more. I believe it's Alyssa Schlander. If you would state your name for the record and proceed.
You're going to be brief, though, right? You could probably put Gino into it. He's just going to be brief.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As the chair said, my name is Alyssa Schlander. I represent the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. We represent all of the new car dealers in the state of Minnesota. All of our members are licensed motor vehicle dealers, and we have had a licensing statute for the past 90 years here in Minnesota, so we're certainly not in trying to grandfather anyone in. I've spoken with the author at length and with the plaintiff's law firm that is advocating for this bill, and hope that we can continue the discussions as the bill moves forward, but we do still have some serious concerns about the cause of action that this bill would create for an individual who wishes to engage in the activity of selling used vehicles without wanting to obtain a motor vehicle dealer's license. In order to get a license in the first place in the state of Minnesota, whether you are incorporated or unincorporated as just a private individual, you have to show that you're not in violation of any of Minnesota's fraud statutes or consumer protection statutes, that you've never engaged in misrepresentation, deceptive trade practices, operating pyramid schemes, you've never been involved in odometer tampering or receiving stolen vehicles, or for that matter, selling stolen vehicles. We believe obviously that the licensing statute allows the authorities to make sure that the individuals who have that kind of a background do not engage in the practice of selling motor vehicles to unsuspecting consumers. I just would like to reiterate the concern that was raised properly, I think, by the League of Minnesota Cities, in that the bill prescribes a very significant departure in the burden of proof that the court would apply to cases like this, and that under the legal standard prescribed in the bill, the court would have to presume that the licensing scheme is inappropriate, presumptively impermissible, and then you know, give, like Pat, Mr. Hines said, you know, give deference to the individual and not the licensing authority. And we think that is a very significant departure from the current state of affairs. So at any rate, I know we're under some time constraints here, so I would just like to just get our concerns on the record. I hope to continue to work with the author as this goes forward, but as we sit now, we are not we're not satisfied with the bill as it is and as it is amended. We don't feel like that takes care of the concern about having individuals who are unlicensed and practicing our business. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Gino Fragnito, the Government Relations Director for the Minnesota CPA Society, and we, too, have some concerns with the bill and have worked with Senator Gerlach. And part of our concern has been addressed in the A3 amendment on lines 1.27 and 1.28. But what our concern mainly focuses still on is that right now for certified public accountants, they're certified, they're also licensed by the state, so they've got two requirements in there. But also the regulatory and licensing requirements for CPAs to be able to conduct business in other states is based on a substantial equivalency in those other states. And what that means is each state looks at Minnesota's law to determine if it is, in fact, substantially equivalent to the laws they have on their books. If they are, then the certified public accountant from Minnesota can do work in that state without actually having to file with that state, apply for a license, or pay a fee. If not, then they have to meet those additional requirements. And so the concerns we have are more of the commerce and interstate commerce with CPAs having clients in multiple states.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know time is short, but I did want to answer a couple of questions, and I wanted to I didn't rebut every single testifier, but there's no time to do that. But I would like to answer some questions and maybe do some concluding comments, and then maybe we can take a vote.
Yep. Any questions from the committee? Senator Dames?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gerlach, could you give me some examples of who might use this process if we change it?
Senator Dames, if you could pull your microphone up.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman and Senator Dames asked about some examples of who might seek relief under this bill. As we had the one example here, of course, but there were others. We heard about the hair braider case that was some immigrants that are trying to get on that first rung of the economic ladder. Immigrants from East Africa practicing hair braiding were told they had to have the 1,500 hours of cosmetology training and such, and that was litigated. There's other things about another case that's been out there that I know Mr. McGrath has been handling is with the casket sales. Do you have to, be a licensed funeral director to be able to sell a casket? And that has been litigated in, I believe, Louisiana. I think Mr. McGrath probably has some other examples of some cases you've worked on as well.
Mr. Chairman, very quickly, what happens is that boards will often take a very liberal interpretation of the Practice Act and attempt to prosecute people who are operating at the margins, not in the core, but at the margins of the Practice Act. And so we have represented animal massage therapists. We've represented horse teeth floaters. We've represented sign hangers, casket monks who make caskets. And it is not the intention from this litigation that anyone who's currently licensed be denied their license, but instead getting a narrower interpretation of the Practice Act and stopping the misapplication of license laws to those who want to pursue their occupations in an honest way.
Thank you.
Chairman, I'll save further questions.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to thank you for your indulgence. I have a concern about the exact example that Senator Gerlach presented with Mr. Dolphy. With local government control, because my whereas it sounds really silly, my concern is that what the need for an arborist would be to control like the green ash borer or the Dutch elm disease and any disposal of diseased or infested wood. And that would be, city to protect its own tree stock is pretty serious. That can be a very expensive venture, as we've all been involved in with the loss of some of our different types of trees.
Thank you, Chairman. I would just say that nothing in this bill prohibits a city from passing ordinances and regulations about the disposal of trees and having other requirements that are less burdensome to the individual business person trying to practice that. That there are other things, like I say, they can pass ordinances on the disposal.
Senator Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a question. I guess I would just point out that I strongly support this legislation. And it seems to me the two objections that have been raised, one is that this shifts the burden of proof to the government to demonstrate the legitimacy of a regulation. It strikes me that in a free society, when we're talking about people's livelihood, that's an entirely reasonable burden. And I think it should be a burden that's fairly high to meet. So I congratulate the authors on bringing this forward. The other issue that's been raised is the cost of litigation. And yet the gentleman that testified, the professor, about the cost, the high cost of regulation, we can't act as though that regulation doesn't have any burden on the economy, because it does. And in fact, the regulatory costs are excruciatingly high for many industries. And so it seems to me we're simply saying we're going to now resolve doubt in favor of liberty and individuals' right to pursue their professions and make the government prove up any problems if they feel they need to come in and regulate. And it seems to me that that's entirely reasonable. And I don't think the cost of litigation, and I don't like the cost of litigation, is going to get anywhere near the kinds of numbers we were hearing in terms of the regulatory burden. And then just as a personal side note, I'm very excited to get to my first unlicensed hair braider. So, you know.
Senator Pappas.
It's challenge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unfortunately, I don't feel quite that we're ready to vote on this bill, and I wish we would hold it over for another hearing, because I think we have to look at two things, is the consistency with current law, and then also having two departments that have concerns about the bill. I don't want us to be in a situation where we might be headed for a veto by the governor, because if the governors, the departments say they're unhappy with the law, they might go to the governor and ask him to veto it. And I'd rather we kind of work out those differences in committee with the state agencies than risk that, because I'd really like to see us be able to pass something.
Senator Gerlach, your thoughts?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, I know you're a co-author on the bill, and I appreciate that. I just in listening to a lot of the testimony, I think so much of it is I don't want to be dismissive, but I think a lot of it is unfounded or just in the it's not really applicable to what we're doing here. I mean, we've made some efforts to put some comfort language in for some folks, clarifying some things. We've done a lot of that, but substantially, we can't go about in this bill carving out individual people. If we go down that road, I don't
Mr.
know.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not requesting that. Okay. I'm just requesting that we work out what are some of the concerns with the two state agencies. That's been my request. And then I would just like the staff to look at the current statute and make sure that there's consistency between what we're doing here and what's already in current law. Okay. That's all. I'm not talking about carving out anything.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, I understand that. If the state agencies have not approached me at all on this yet. This is, you know, this was, in fact, one of them did last night at 5:45 in the evening. I'm certainly continuing to work on this. If there are some things that don't destroy the intent or aren't doing the individual carve-outs, if there's some language in here that we can do, like the federal preemption language, if we, you know, whatever it is on some of those things, and I'm happy to continue to work on that going forward. But without, if I don't know that there's any specific language, I mean, they haven't, the
it's very difficult to delay and hold when it's just concerns without any specific language. I'm afraid that it may come to just a philosophical difference about what we're doing, and in which case I think that will imperil the bill. There's the motion will be to send this to judiciary, and as we know, that's a difficult burden barrier on its own to even to get there. I mean, I'm hopeful, but I don't know, and I'm going to continue to work on it. But I appreciate your concern, but I'm just not comfortable delaying it. I think that I've added a lot of accommodations so far, and I think a lot of the fears are, like I say, I think they're unfounded. I think that a lot of the folks that are testifying against it, if the licensing that they're enforcing, if they are truly believe that it is sound and that it is the best way to protect the health and safety of Minnesotans, there is nothing to be concerned about. If you think maybe there's some fencing or an overreach, then you'll have some concern, and that's exactly what this bill is supposed to get at. So I'd like to continue to go forward, and I mean, I'll continue to work with individuals. It's not going to the floor yet.
Senator Jungbauer first, then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, right? And one, my first question was going to be, doesn't it go to judiciary? And it seems that every true question ended up in what would happen in a court challenge, which would really be fine-tuning under judiciary language. So I think that's a fine place to send it to. And as I know, with many good-intentioned bills, they tend to die in judiciary if that language isn't solved. So I think the author is on the right track there. But it really does spell out, especially in lines 3.1 and 2, that the government has to have this compelling interest in protecting against present and recognizable harm. And that's really what people said, that if we didn't license certain individuals, there was a harm to the public, and we certainly can. This bill restates that is a good reason to license, and I don't. I guess in the absence of language from some of the agencies, I'm finding it hard to understand what exactly they think this bill does that I can't see as well. So I'm very comfortable moving it to judiciary and handling those issues that people seem to think will be court challenge type issues.
Senator Reiner, do you still have a comment or a question?
I do. And I'd like to move one small amendment to come back to the double negative. And I'd talked to Mr. Stang about it, and I didn't share you with the language. But so on the A3 amendment, it would be on line 1.10. We would strike "does not include," and on line 1.11, strike A, and insert "excludes." So it would read "occupational regulation excludes regulation." Oh, I'm sorry, a regulation not related to an individual's qualification. So it just gets rid of the double negative, and I think makes it easier for everyone to read and understand what you're trying to do.
Mr. Stang, could you repeat that?
Mr. Chairman, I believe Senator Reiner's amendment, the sentence would read as follows. Occupational regulation excludes a regulation not related to an individual's qualifications, and it continues on as is.
Correct.
But it gets rid of not.
Yes, exactly.
I think it reads a little better.
So Senator Reiner moves that oral amendment. Senator Gerlach?
Mr. Chairman, that's fine. I would support that amendment.
All in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chair, comment. Coming back, Chair Gerlach, to your comment about there being potentially philosophical impasses or differences, I'm actually philosophically with you on this. My concern are on some of the logistical issues that have been raised. So, Mr. McGrath, I recall you meeting with me last session, and especially Subdivision 6 really resonates, just to have this conceptual idea that we don't automatically go to the highest level, that we sort of progress our way up there as a need has been demonstrated. So I can't be supportive now, but I hope that, and Chair Gerlach, I've grown to have a lot of respect for you. I know you'll work with some of the concerns, especially from the agencies, I think. And I have no doubt that you'll get through judiciary and we'll get a chance to see this again on the floor.
All right. Senator Gerlach moves that Senate File 1629, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Senate File 1629 is recommended. Passed. It's going to Judiciary and Public Safety.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I obviously we're not going to get to the last bill on the agenda, so we're going to have to roll that over to the next committee hearing, and then you could adjourn the meeting.
So the committee is adjourned.
Okay.